So today I'm going to give you guys an overview into MonoGame, what it is, and how you can use it to take your existing XNA games and bring them to Windows 8, hopefully without too much extra code having to be written or problems along the way. And we will be going through in some detail the process step by step with the game that I wrote recently for a contest, which I will get into. So let me start off by introducing myself. Let's see. So I moved to Amsterdam in April. At that time, I left Microsoft, where I've been working for 4 years. I had worked for the Exchange Outlook Web Access team, which is a team responsible for a web interface that does mail and calendaring and things of that sort. After working there for 4 years, my girlfriend had a great opportunity to come out to Amsterdam, and I thought this was just a great opportunity for me to start a new chapter in my life. So moving out to Amsterdam, I decided I've got this passion for making games, I've got this great opportunity to do it, I wanted to take that energy and that opportunity and found a company. So I founded Spotted Zebra, with the focus being on making games for emerging platforms. Initially, with Windows 8 on the horizon, I felt like the time was right to take some of my skills in C# and XNA and also take advantage of the enthusiasm for that new platform, and so I decided to make some games for Windows 8. Okay. Let's see. Well, I guess in addition, you might be wondering, you know, why am I making games and so forth? And I guess I would say that, given my background in office software, and for me, making games is always a really rewarding and creative endeavor, much more so than other types of software. So it was a really natural decision to get into game development. And I thought I'd just take a second to show you guys, can't see that, two of the games that I'm working on real briefly. So the first one is a game called AdLib, as you can see. And in AdLib, the goal of the game is to spell words as quickly as possible. Let's see if it will start. All right. And so you can flip letters, and you see that words are spelled automatically in response. And as letters, as words are collected, letters fall and whatever, causing combos of that sort. And over time, new letters get added. So this is the sort of game you could make, certainly. And then a second game that I've also completed is called Petunk. To give you some background, this is the second game I made for Windows 8, and this game took me about a month to make it. So, you know, not too long in the scheme of things. You can see that there are many levels in this game, and it is a physics-style puzzle game where you're trying to land balls on the target and that kind of thing. And then you can keep playing. So this is just a background in terms of the kind of things that I've been working on and why I'm here. Let's see. Great. Seems to be a bug with the newest version of PowerPoint that it's keeping the taskbar. Yeah, let me exit and re-enter. All right. So why use MonoGame and XNA to target Windows 8? Well, I mean, I think the most obvious reason is if you have a game that's already written for XNA, some of you may already have one, in which case you can take all the work you've done and you can reach a new platform relatively easily, as I'll show you. In addition, you know, I think, personally speaking, having written games for Java, having written games with Flash, I think C#, XNA, and Visual Studio are a great combination to make games. They're very productive. The tooling's really great. There's a lot of open source libraries out there that you can pull to bring in and help with your games. So to me, that's also a compelling reason. I get to use the tools I like to use. And I guess the last, you know, one of the last reasons is, you know, with MonoGame, which is sort of coming into its own relatively recently, you're able to target a lot of platforms. So in addition to the traditional set of platforms like Windows XP, Vista, and Windows 7, which you can target with XNA, and Windows Phone 7 more recently, you can also target Mac OS X, iOS, Android, and Linux, and as you'll see later today, Windows 8. I guess I would add to this as well, just that, you know, I think today, and maybe for the next month or two, there's a great opportunity for, you know, for your business if you want to make a game, or for your reputation, of course, for Windows 8. I think that, as was alluded to before, there's going to be a lot of people buying Windows 8 just because of the Windows brand and Microsoft's position in the market. At the same time, because it's a new platform, I think there's going to be a lot of interest in the media in terms of what the games are and you know, what's going on. So in contrast, a game that I've made for the iPhone, you know, nobody ever found that game. It was never picked up in the larger press and so forth. I'm hoping that with Windows 8, just because there'll be renewed interest in this new platform and relatively fewer games, I'll be able to solve that problem. And I think you guys could do the same. All right, so this is the game that we're going to be working on. It's called Move the Cheese. So let me give you a little bit of background with this game. I wrote the game for a contest called Ludum Dare. For those of you who aren't familiar with what Ludum Dare is, I actually highly recommend participating. It's a 48-hour game competition where you are given a theme on, say, Friday evening, and then you work like a maniac for the next 48 hours to build a game from scratch. And so the result for me was Move the Cheese. This past year, to give you a sense of how active this contest is, which happens online, I should add, there were over 1,000 games submitted for the contest. So a lot of energy there, a lot of great creativity and so forth. And I think best of all, it's an opportunity to really force yourself to get in there and make something in a quick and short period of time without focusing too much on unessential details. You can just sort of prototype an idea real quickly. So, you know, that's how the game came about. You know, whenever I work in a game contest like that, I try as much as possible to make the code open source so that I don't worry about as much about getting it right. I want to focus on getting it to work in that period of time. So all the code, if you're interested, you'll be able to download off of GitHub. I can give you the link in person, or I will also distribute the slides. Move the Cheese targets Windows 7. I wasn't thinking about Windows 8 when I wrote that. So some of the things that I do when I start a new project to try and make sure that it will be easier to port, you know, best practices, which I'll be sharing with you at the end of this discussion, I didn't take those best practices with Move the Cheese. I just wrote it as directly as possible to get to the goal of finishing the game. I think I bring this up because I think you'll see, even though I didn't think about Windows 8 when I was writing the game, and even though I took advantage of, you know, some of the different features that XNA offers, it was still not any particularly difficult feat to get the game into Windows 8. And so I say it's a typical 2D game, so maybe you want to know what that means. And I'd love to take a second, I'll run the game, and we can take a quick look at some of the code to see what we're dealing with. While this is loading up, I guess I'll describe a little bit at the high level some of the features that I'm taking advantage of. So I suppose perhaps, you know, the place to start is with the user input. And this is a very simple game, as you'll see, in terms of how the user manipulates it. But nonetheless, I'm using the mouse state, or mouse class, rather, to get all the user input. And so, you know, obviously, for Windows 8, you need to figure out how to support touch as well as the mouse. and any other input device that they'll throw at you, such as like pens and what have you. And I think what you'll find is that if your game is not taking advantage of multi-touch, which is probably the case for most of you who are porting games that already exist, then you can get by using the mouse class as is, and you don't need to make any changes. So I would say that's one of the advantages, again, of using XNA. And then, let's see. It's taking much longer than I anticipated to load this project. All right. Well, I guess it's not loading as fast as I thought. But in addition to using the mouse class to do user input, to do persistence, for instance, I track what level you've beaten so that if you play the game a second time, it takes you to the next level. Here we go. In that case, I use the session manager class here, which uses the file system to write the file to the user's app data folder, basically. So you can see there's nothing terribly fancy going on, but at some point the application says, hey, write the file. Let me hit run before I go too much in the code, because sometimes it can be confusing when you don't have a clear concept of what you're seeing. Well, this is running in the background. I'm going to start up the next instance of Visual Studio. All right. So this is the game Move the Cheese. You basically can rotate the board clockwise or counterclockwise, and as you might expect, gravity takes on when you do so, and things shift around. The goal of the game, of course, is to get this mouse here next to this piece of cheese, and naturally these caterpillar-looking cats will destroy, will make you lose. So you can see that if I rotate left and right, everything moves around. These balloon things, they go up instead of down and so forth. I won't try to beat this level because it's, in fact, apparently very challenging according to the feedback that I've gotten, and probably not the right thing to do in front of all of you. But you get the gist of it. So there are, to call out again, there are various game objects that respond to something like gravity. There are scores that are being kept. Levels are being tracked. These are buttons that do things that buttons do. What else? I don't know. Trying to see if I can lose. I can't. All right. And various other little doodads. So I'll take a quick look at the code now. So I guess to start off, the way the project's structured is about as simply as I could have structured it. LudumDare 24 has all the code. You can see here that I've separated things in according to what they call the model view, view model architecture. I'll talk about that more, but it's okay if you did not adopt something similar, although I recommend it. It's similar to model view controller for those of you who are familiar with that term. But basically all the game code is right here. In this class, the serial project, I have just one class, which I will touch on. I have a content pipeline extension. I have the content project, which has all the assets and so forth. So a pretty standard 2D XNA game. So I was starting to talk about the mouse input. Let's just take a quick look at that. So this is all handled through. I've abstracted it all in this class, but as you can see, I pass in the button state and position, and then I pipe everything through that to handle certain events. And that's going to be the same in every class. So again, if you use mouse state, you're doing a good job. If you're making a Windows Phone 7 game and you're porting it and you use the touch panel, again, that will work just fine as well. If you're using, let's say, an Xbox controller, then we'll have to talk a little bit more about how to get yourself onto the right platform. I mentioned persistence, So in the case of persistence, as I alluded to, I'm writing to a file, in this case, session.xml, which is under some special folder, the application data folder. And all I'm doing is just creating a data contract serializer and writing it out as XML, so nothing fancy, especially in this case, because all I'm writing is an integer. In more complicated games like AdLib and so forth, I'll describe some of the tricks you can do and why you would do them, but I fundamentally just use the data contract serializer or the JSON data contract serializer in all my games. So I mentioned the content pipeline extension. Let me take a look at one of these levels to show you what I'm doing here. The levels are all tiled files. I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with tiled. Hopefully it's launching. Well, that's disappointing. I do not have tiled installed, but I will tell you that tiled is a 2D map editor that is available open source that you can use to create tiles, maps from tile sets and so forth. I think it's a great tool when you're trying to do rapid prototyping or anything of that sort. I actually think it's a good tool generally speaking. And it outputs files that have, let's see here, love to open this up with, not the store. All right, Vim would be better. It generates files like this, just XML files with all sorts of metadata in it, and this here itself is just an encoded, as you can see, compressed definition of the file. So the levels that you saw, like level 8, those are defined in that format. In the game, that format that I just showed you is not particularly helpful. So what I've done, freeze my computer. What I've done is create a content pipeline extension. So this extension reads TMX files, and I won't show you all the gory details and how it processes those files, but it just loops through the XML, finds the things that it wants, and then it creates doodad placements. A doodad is what I call the blocks, the cats, the cheese, and all those kind of things. So I end up taking that TMX file and I convert it to just a simple XML file saying a cat is at position 1,1, the block is at position 0,0, etc. So again, I'm not sure how many of you guys have gone and explored content pipeline and content extensions, but it's one of the great features that XNA has, and I'm going to show you how you can use it and still continue to use it in Mono game. So the serial project, just to touch on it briefly, you can see that it's just got this doodad placement. That's all it has. The reason why that project exists is because the content pipeline needs to reference it, and the game needs to reference it. And if I put this class in Ludum Dare's project, in the project that my mouse is hovering over, in that situation, there would be a circular reference that would be created, so it's not possible. You'll see that this is going to create a little bit of work for us later on, but it's, again, nothing insurmountable. It's just a heads up. So to continue the quick tour through the old game, I have a doodad factory that creates doodads from the metadata that the doodad placements contain, such as if it's a cat and what column and row it should be in. In this case, all the doodads have the same constructor, so I can just simply use reflection to invoke the constructor like so. I bring this up because, as we will see, this is going to pose a problem later on. Well, all right. So you've seen the project. You guys have got a sense now, I hope, that there is nothing interesting under test, literally. I didn't do any tests for the contest. The tools is it's just a collection of command line tools that help me analyze the board. And all the game logic is happening through basically the models class. The game states are basically through the view models, and the views are handling drawing. Great. All right. So when we're going to create a Windows 8 project, you obviously have to start somewhere. And you know, the most natural place to start is to create a new project. If you have an existing solution, what I like to do is just have all of my projects in one solution. So I like to have Windows 7 projects and Windows 8 projects in the same solution, which means that at any given point, half the projects will not be loaded because they're not supported by the flavor of Visual Studio that you're using. But I think it keeps things in one place. Of course, alternatively, if you're just going to create a brand new, not a brand new game necessarily, but you're not interested in continuing to work on the older version that you're upgrading, you could create a new project. I guess I will run through the sort of the outline of how to do that, and then I'll take a look at the end result with you guys. I would say that I have created a set of project templates that you can use to more quickly get started on this. I recommend checking it out on GitHub and using those, because then you can just say file new project, Windows 8 game, and it'll take you 75% of the way there or whatever. It'll take you through some of the steps that I'm going to outline in a moment. So yeah, if you wanted to do it by hand though, just so you guys have a firm understanding of what's going on, you start off, step one, open your Visual Studio, create the solution. Step two, create a blank Windows 8 project. And then step three is the sort of boring stuff, remove all the unnecessary code. I'm going to take a quick look with you at the results of step three, and we'll discuss some of what happened. But I don't want to go through and do it all. I think we don't have time for that. Probably be more fun to get working on your own games. So while this is loading, I'll just start describing some of the higher level concepts. In a blank project, what you get is an app file, app.xaml, a main page file, mainpage.xaml, and that's basically it. Everything else, for our purposes, we delete or we don't care about. So the app file's purpose in your game is basically to act as sort of a container for the game. You're not going to be doing, I expect, much code there or much logic there. In practice, wow, this is too bad. All right, let's take a look. Well, continuing on, in practice what you're going to do is you're going to create the graphics device. Well, let me stop and say, if any of you are familiar with Windows Phone 7, then this is going to look a lot like making a split application of XAML and or Silverlight and XNA-based application, in the sense that you're going to effectively host your XNA game in a XAML page. That's what we're going to, that's the end goal here. So the app.xaml, as you can see, has nothing in it. I mean, we're just nothing at all. Later on, we may add a little bit of styles or something like here, a style sheet, but we will cross that bridge when we get there. And app.xaml, the code behind, it's going to do a little bit of logic, as I was alluding to. It's going to create the device manager. So this is what's going to give you access to write to the screen. You can see we do it on construction. It happens right here. It's going to handle resuming and suspending the application. So a limitation of an XNA Windows 8 game is that you cannot have a traditional navigation structure. A traditional Windows 8 app will have a frame as its root, as the content for the window, as you can see right here. That's not supported if you are trying to make a game. So what you instead end up doing is just setting a root to, in this case, main page. You can call it whatever you want, of course. And we'll look at that in a second. But at this point on launched, as you can see, for this game, we do nothing particularly of interest. We're just creating it and running. If you had a game where you wanted to make sure that, let's say, the player could, it's difficult to think of a game example, so I'll give a non-game example. if you had a reading application like an RSS reader and you scrolled three quarters of the way through, at this point on launched, you might say, oh, he's resuming from suspension. I will make sure to put him back three quarters of the way through. That kind of logic would go in on launched. But typically in my experience for a game, you don't need to do anything like that. You'll have to take it on a case-by-case basis. So. And then finally in suspending, right now the application doesn't do anything, so it doesn't suspend anything. But this is the stage that's going to be called right before your application is terminated. And basically at this point you will save the state of the board, save the current turn, whatever is relevant for your game will go here. I will add as a warning that you may also want to find other times to save your data. Like it's, you know, the, if you want to have an experience where the player, for instance, navigates to a different application, closes his laptop, picks up his tablet, and it's all there, you might want to have handled the blur event when he switched to that other window to save the data there. But you'll have to sort of take it again on a case-by-case basis. And the rule of thumb, of course, being don't overdo it, because otherwise you're just thrashing their hard drive, taking up a lot of network, or whatever the case is for your storage. So this is the app, .xaml. Let's take a quick look at mainpage.xaml so we can understand the full structure of this project. All right, so main page is going to load in the designer, but there's nothing to see. It's a swap chain background panel. The swap chain background panel lets you draw to it. It's not really anything more interesting to say except for A, make sure you put a grid or something empty in there. I have found if you don't do that, a bug occurs, which will lead to a weird behavior later on, especially when you change orientations. B, I suppose, if you wanted to, you could put XAML in here. You could put a text box or whatever. And then that would just float on top of your game. So think about what your game is like. Think about what your goals are. If you want to have some more sophisticated user interface, the likes of which would be easier to create with XAML, it is possible to do it. You would put it right here, and you could connect the code up in different ways. On the flip side, from reading about this, I hear that there are performance concerns. So don't go overboard and make a really elaborate set of XAML controls and so forth. And of course, one of the reasons I don't use XAML particularly is just that anything you write with the XAML won't work on Windows 7, so in your XNA game. So you'll end up having to recreate that user interface anyway. So in my experience, I tend to not do that, with a couple exceptions. The code behind for this is a little bit more interesting. The main page acts as the game loop for you. So in a traditional XNA game, you extend from the game class, you override the protected update and draw methods, and you're off to the races. With Windows 8 and Mono Game, again, like I said before, it's a lot like Windows Phone when you mix Silverlight and XNA. You're not going to have that game object anymore. And in fact, the next step we're going to take is to extract the core logic from the game object. But instead, you're going to have main page .xaml. The code behind. So you can see here we create a game timer. The game timer has got events for draw and update. You have it get going at a certain interval. On load, we start it, and then right now we don't draw anything. As you can see, we don't update anything. But later when we have a game, we'll do that. Let's see. App provider is a class that I wrote. Again, it's part of that project template I alluded to before. Its purpose is just so that we can create a content manager. I don't even know what it does, to be perfectly honest. The content manager probably uses it to reference certain services, but I don't know what they would be. It's just a dictionary, as you can see as well. It's a very, very straightforward thing. Well, in terms of the structure, in case those of you aren't familiar, This is the set of directories and so forth that you would start off with. Assets is typically where I would store my game assets. So later on, we will create images, sounds, and other so forth subdirectories here and start copying content in. Common, there's all sorts of files that the Windows 8 products will give you if you pick certain templates, such as layout-aware pages and things like this. I know some people use those and find them useful. When I was using more XAMLs for Windows 8, I still didn't use those things. I found you know, that they were kind of confusing, and it was easier just to write your own. What you might use, though, is the standard styles here. You can just sort of take a quick look. I won't bore you with all the bloody details of how XAML styles work, but basically it's sort of like CSS, where you've got, you know, rules and styles that are, you know, that follow the rules. You can tell if you look at the scroll bar, there are a lot of styles here. So this is why, as much as possible, you might slim it down and delete, because you're not going to use almost any of them, and they do take time to get processed and so forth. Every time the application is launched, it has to reflect on all that XAML and understand what it means. Let's see here. Well, I guess the last thing is just, the package app manifest. So this is what's going to define your application's name and other things like that. So you can take a quick look. For instance, if your application only supports, say, landscape, you could check these two, and now it won't flip into portrait mode. If you wanted to change your logo or add a wide logo, I will show you all these steps later, but obviously you just put them in there. And other metadata, which we can go through in more detail. Capabilities, I guess there's two things to say about capabilities. First, obviously, if you need to make a call to the internet, then you better check internet client, because otherwise it will just fail on you. It won't let you connect to the internet. So think about what requirements your application has and turn those capabilities on. But also think about who your target audience is and what you want to do. For Petunk, for instance, that was the physics game. You know, I'd really love that game to be played by younger audiences, since it has basically no written text and it's a very straightforward game. But if you click and add this capability for internet client, then I believe you cannot sell your game to anyone younger than 12 or maybe 7. So depending on who you want your audience to be, you will need to think about what capabilities to turn on. A very real consequence of that for me in Petunk meant that, I can't download levels off the internet right now. Maybe in a future version I can do that, but if I want this version to target younger audiences, then the younger audiences aren't allowed to download these levels and so forth, so that's, you know, out of my hands for now. So just something to think about. Declarations, I haven't really used this, but to experiment, but for instance, if you wanted to associate your game with a certain type of file, you could do it here, you could add a declaration. And packaging, nothing, I don't think anything terribly important. I honestly don't know why this is here and not in the application UI, but yeah, this is something you might change as well. It's the splash screen that will come up when the application first launches, while it's like spinning up. All right, so I'm not going to save those changes. So again, this is like the core Windows 8 project that I hope all of you as a first step will get here. And I'll talk about that. But once you've gotten this, then the next step will be to start to fill out the game. Just to quickly mention, I did add the mono game references to this, which you'll have to do manually. Unfortunately, package project templates don't let you do this. But basically, one way or another, you're going to build mono game. Download it from source and build it. It's no big deal. Once you've done that, what I typically do is just copy into a directory that I call third-party libs, which you can call whatever you want, of course. The various things. These are the ones you need. SharpDX is the underlying library for MonoGame. That it is a wrapper, a C# wrapper around DirectX. MonoGame, of course, is a re-implementation of XNA that's open source. So MonoGame sits on top of DirectX, on top of SharpDX, in order to do its draw calls and input and things like that. So, all right, that's the anatomy of a Windows 8 project. Let me make sure I'm not leaving anything out, though. Well, I guess let's run it real quick since we have it open, just to give you a sense of what to expect at this stage. So that's the splash screen I was mentioning. So you can see I don't have a, I just have the default one. And yeah, it's a blank screen. That's all we got right now. Nothing interesting. And to be clear, in case it wasn't, the black is coming from this call right here. I did add this just for the sake of the demo. If you don't have this, it flickers and it looks bad. All right, so I'm going to close that and hopefully reopen the next project. And while that's going, I'll talk a little bit more. All right. Great. So just to reiterate, I did create a set of project templates, which, you know, at least for me, I will be using them for the rest of my games, and I recommend you check them out. The first set creates a Windows 7 project, or solution really, with a portable class library, which I will go into later, a test project, which you may or may not choose to use, and the core project as well. And then the second project template, you can then add to that solution a Windows 8 project that will look like the one I just showed you. You'll have to manually add references to MonoGame yourself, unfortunately, but it'll take you 99% of the way there, like I was saying. Otherwise, feel free to you know, ask me for help to manually convert to from the blank project to what I was showing. I'm happy to do that. All right, so, okay. How are we going to upgrade our game for Windows 8? Well, you know, step one is decide what you want. Do you want to have a game that runs well, you know, fully across more than one platform, or is it just a, you know, a quick job to get on Windows 8? I would say if your answer is it's a quick job, then you'll do what I'm showing you today, which is copy all the files and paste them into the new project, and you'll have duplicated everything, and that's fine. If what your goal is to have this game work across different platforms, say Windows 7 and below, and Windows 8, then in that case, I would say, at the minimum, you should explore using file linking. They have this concept where you can add a file as a link. I'll show you that, I suppose. Or also this portable class library. But to be honest, that's a much taller order, which I can talk about if there's time at the end. But for the purposes of today, let's say that we've chosen, you know, option two. We're just going to do the quick and dirty. We want the Windows 8 to work. So we're going to copy all the files in there and have total duplication. That's fine. So the second thing you have to do is copy all of your compiled art assets. One of the limitations of MonoGame is that it does not implement the content pipeline. It can read from the content pipeline, but it cannot, it doesn't process content itself. Just to make sure everyone's clear about what the content pipeline is, when you add an image to XNA, what happens is when you build, the content pipeline picks that image up and it says, okay, you know, he's marked this as content, it's a type of texture, 2D, so it actually will then convert it to a new format, and the format that it's going to wind up in the extension is XNB. And if you ever go look, you can go see they're buried somewhere in your build folder. In debug mode, actually, it will decompress and basically turn your images into bitmaps. So, you know, not necessarily great, but that's what it does. And in retail mode, it'll do some compression. It will do different things for different files, not all of which I'm necessarily, you know, well versed in. But the point is that MonoGame will not do that for your PNGs, and so what you will typically do, and what I've been doing, is you will create a Windows 7 project. Whether it's a full game or just a blank content project is not really important. You will add all your content there. You will build that, and then either as a post-build step, which I recommend, or as a manual step, which I don't, you will copy all the content into your Windows 8 project, and then you're off to the races. Definitely build the script, in which case you just have to add each thing to your Windows 8 project once and then it's all fine. But that's an important step because it's a big limitation of MonoGame. I think that, you know, looking at their roadmap, they're definitely hard at work to try and implement the content pipeline natively, or whatever you want to say, within Monogame, but it's not there today. And there are discrepancies, which I will sort of allude to later on. Small things, but they do come up. So, of course, once you've got both those things in place, you build, and you'll see all these errors, and then you get to fixing them. Once you've fixed all the errors, you will at that point have a building game, but nothing will be connected to that main game stuff I was showing you. So the next step is to extract something and then place it into that. So let's just take a look, because as always, I think it's easier just to look a little bit of code. All right. Let's see. All right, so let me step back, show you what I've done here. I went to the Windows 7 project, which was this one. I copied these three directories, this class, which I know are the ones that are doing any actual work. I copied them, and I pasted them right here. That's all I did. With maybe one exception. And then, I wish I hadn't clicked on that. Then I just built, as you saw, and so I've got some errors that we're going to have to fix. I mean, I think at first blush you can see it's really not all that many errors. It's not hundreds of errors or something like that. It's a manageable number. To me, it's already really excellent that you can take a game with all this functionality going on, plop it into Monogame, and then just get a dozen errors or something like that, and that gives me a lot of confidence, in fact. Let me take a quick look at this class. Okay, yeah. And let's take a look here. Great. All right. So, just wanted to make sure I was on where I thought it was. So, Ludum Dare Main, you can see it still extends from game. We can't instantiate the game anymore. We don't have the necessary pieces to do that with this. So one of the steps we're going to have to take is to extract this, which we will do. But let's start off by building again and seeing what the errors are. So before I mentioned reflection was a problem. So reflection has changed in Windows 8. You don't have the same API. You don't have access to the same things. I'm not sure. I couldn't give you a point by point tell you which the differences are. But in my experience, there's typically something that you can call to get what you want anyway. So in this case, oh my gosh. In this case, what you generally want to call is for the type object. So you see here I've got the doodad type, which is a tongue twister, of type type. You want to say get get type info. Do you want to say that? Oh, typo. Okay. Very confused. So when you do that, then reflector comes in. And so once you have that, then you have, instead of get constructors, you have declared constructors. And you can see at this point I can just copy and paste. It's all the same. All right, so now our reflection is working again, and we fixed one more error. It's gone. Let's take a look at this. So I didn't show this off, but in the original version of the game, there was a little spotted zebra logo in the top right. If you clicked on that, I launched a URL to my website or something along those lines, right? You can imagine, for instance, for AdLib and Petunk, the games I'm working on, on the Windows 7 version of those games, when you share, like you share your high score or something, I just launch a Facebook URL with the appropriate parameters set. We'll look into some of the more sophisticated things you can do with Windows 8, but the point is that to launch a URL on Windows 7, you call process.start and you pass in the URL. Process.start is not available on Windows 8 anymore, so we have to do it some other way. In this case, what we're going to do is call Windows.System.launcher, and we're going to launch this. And it takes a type of a URI. So I'm going to split this on two lines because it's not possible to read it. I can discuss what this command is if you guys like, but basically commands are invoked when you click a button. not too complicated. So when you click the open company URL button, it's in this case going to launch the URI asynchronously. So one of the major pushes in Windows 8 in the runtime is that anything that could take time, basically, any amount of time at all, really, gets pushed into async code. So any kind of file operation, reading a remote resource, anything like that is going to end up being asynchronous. In this case, with the launch URI async, I don't care for what happens afterwards. So I'm not interested in getting the result of that action. So I can fire and forget that, which is what I'm doing here. In other cases, you might want to get the results. And I'll try and find an example to show you guys if you're interested in how that might work. But in general, the gist of that is that there's a new keyword, it's called await, and a second new keyword called async. You can make methods asynchronous by marking them with the async keyword, and then you can await their results by invoking them with this await keyword ahead of it. And it lets you kind of turn your asynchronous code, which formerly might have taken the form of many event handlers and callbacks and so forth, into more synchronous code. By letting the compiler do some of the work for you. Anyway, so in this case, it was a relatively straightforward fix. If you're launching any URLs or anything like that, which isn't a bad idea necessarily, you can do it like this. Again, this is not to read a URL. This is just to launch it for an IE in this case. We can talk about the reading of the URL. So the last one, the one I'm saving for last, is not really that complicated, but I guess a little bit more, is the session manager. So I mentioned before, I was writing sessions to disk. That was great for Windows 7, super snappy, super easy, super not available for Windows 8. So when you can't write, to step back, you can do some file manipulation. If you mark, I mentioned before in the capabilities, if you go to your capabilities and your manifest, you can actually request specific access to, say, the documents folder or the music folder, and you can do some things like that. But probably that's not the Windows 8 way to go about it. A second thing you can do, which I think is more of a Windows 8 way to go, if you are, for instance, asking the player where does he want to save his game data, you could launch a picker experience where the user could then navigate to the documents folder and pick whatever folder he wants. Again, that's fine. I feel like, and this is my own personal preference, but I feel like games shouldn't bother the player with that kind of stuff. They should just clean themselves up as best they can, and saving is not something the user wants to have to worry about. So what I try to do is use roaming settings, which is also a new feature for Windows 8. I'm not sure how much you learned about it before, but basically you can store a little bit of data. I think it's 100 kilobytes maybe, or 100, no, it must be 100 kilobytes. So not that much data, but you can store it basically as a set of key value pairs. And at that point, any of the user's Windows 8 devices, I have a tablet that I will show you guys later, but they will become synced. The data will be synced across those devices over time. So it adds a little bit of complexity, certainly, but I think it's a good feature to support. So let's take a quick look, and you'll see it's very easy to do. So I'm just going to remove this file-related stuff because that's not important anymore. I'm going to remove this file-related thing. There's no longer a directory that we're checking for. Likewise, there's no longer this thing. So I'm going to delete this line too, but I will say this. For more complicated games, you'll keep this, and you will write to a memory stream, and then you will probably get a bytecode array at the end of that, which you will just stick into the storage, the roaming storage. In this case, we're storing an integer, so I don't need to do all that extra work, but I'd be happy to show you, if there's some time at the end, a more robust way to save your data. No matter what it is, and I'll describe some of the tips and tricks that I use there. So let's see here. Ah, yes. So application data is this global singleton, for better or for worse. It's going to give you access to all sorts of ways that you could save your data. So I did mention that I'm using roaming settings, but I suppose you could store it in local settings as well, it operates the same way. It's just that will be stored locally to the computer. As a rule of thumb, I would put it like this. game state, like for instance in AdLib, the word game, what level you're on and what the board looks like, that should roam. I mean, I want to take that with me when I go onto my phone or the tablet or whatever. Game settings, like did I mute the music or not? I mean, it's up to your discretion, of course, but in my opinion, that should be local. I muted the music on my phone, but when I get home and I play it on my computer, I've got headphones on and now I want to have all the music, right? I don't want to have to go and keep toggling the options on and off when I move between platforms. This is my own opinion, so this is how I do it, but I think you can do it in different ways. Taking a quick look at this, since it's got some interesting properties, you can actually see what your quota is here. So this will return to you, I believe, 100 or something along those lines. And I think it's possible to see how much you've used, but I guess I'm not seeing that right now. We'll come back to that. We'll look that up afterwards. For the purposes of this, we're just going to say settings equals whatever. And then it's basically a dictionary. I mean, you could do it like this. I would generally define a constant, but you could do it like this. That's it. Now you've saved it in roaming storage. It's not a bad idea at that point to say, signal data change. This should force immediately the data to be propagated, or at least put it on a queue somewhere to get propagated. Otherwise, I don't think there's any guarantee when it will happen. So again, at this point we've stored in the my key value the current level. If you had more complicated stuff, they have some interesting ideas. You can create containers. A container is basically a collection of values that change together. So how to put this succinctly? I'll go with the example I gave before about game state, like the state of the board and the game settings. The state of the board should change independently of the settings, right? Like if you move the block and spell a new word, I shouldn't have to re-upload the settings, whether you muted the game, to the server and back to all the devices. So in that case, you put them in separate containers, and that way whenever this container changes, it gets updated, and whenever this container changes, it gets updated, but they're separate. So it's just kind of a more advanced feature if you're looking for that kind of granularity. Going back to the read session, so again, all this stuff that I've just highlighted has to do with the file stuff. We don't have files, so we don't need anything like this. We can just basically do what we did before. I mean, I'm making it look too easy maybe with the fact that it's a integer. So what you'd like to say is something like this, cast it, of course. But maybe you want to check as well, I'd recommend, because this will lead to a key not found exception, not session. If settings doesn't contain the key, well, in that case, we should just set it to whatever the default is, right? One, let's say. We start at level one. Otherwise, what is going on here? Otherwise, we read it as normal. So at this point, it should build, actually. I mean, I know it sounds very easy, and what I've done is nothing that you guys couldn't have figured out on your own and so forth, but this was a real game that, as you saw, you know, you could play. It had some novel aspects to it, and all I did was copy all the code in here and make a few simple fixes, which, of course, were partly simple because I knew what I was doing, and now we have a building game. Now, if I run the game, you'll notice that it's still a blank screen. Okay, and that's because we haven't done anything to the main class. The main class isn't being called anywhere. If I said, you know, find usages, there are none. So we got to fix that problem. There it is. And to fix that problem, I'll try and go through it real quick because I think this is probably going to be one of the bigger tasks for you guys. I mean, again, what's great is that it's never hard. It's always pretty darn easy to do it, but you know, it's good to see it. So we could construct it like this. What I have found, though, is that you really need to say game.run or something like that, and it just doesn't work, I find. Instead, what I tend to do is the following. I tend to say something along the lines of, I initialize the game here, and of course, I update the game here. And I draw. There's one other operation, but we'll come back to that. So none of those methods exist yet, but we're fortunate because we extended from the game class and they really do exist, right? We just have to rename them and make them public. Start off, get rid of the base class. Make it public. I'm gonna just copy and paste this now. Oops. Well, that I won't make public, actually. It's kind of your discretion what you want to make public and what you don't. The reason why I was saying I don't want load to be public, for those of you who are not familiar, I'm going to just get rid of this since I don't use it. Load is always called during initialization. When you call base.initialize, it calls load content. This is just the flow in which XNA's game works. So I prefer to just call load content there myself, just to ensure that nothing creeps in there. So that's most of the way. As you can see, we should have satisfied main game. Yeah, there's no more errors over here. But you can see that there are still problems here. That it doesn't have a graphics device. On exiting is gone. Let's get rid of that. Obviously, there's no base class to call anymore, so let's delete that. Let's see here, what's this one? Okay, so yeah, graphics device, exit, we'll get rid of that. There's no controller state to check. Some of this stuff is just left over from the default one. All right, so for the graphics device, here's the solution I highly recommend. They have an interface called iGraphicsDeviceService. Just pass it in. You'll see what we're gonna do in a second. Also, you need the content manager from somewhere. Just pass that in too. Why do I recommend doing this? Because this way, if you make a Windows 7 version of your game, and that Windows 7 version of your game, of course, extends from the game object, like this class did initially, well, you can just have that game object construct an instance of this very class and call these methods. So this ludumdare main will become the shared game class across all the different platforms. And they all just have to figure out how to create their graphics device services, which they do in different ways, or how to create their content managers, which they might do in different ways. So all this stuff, gonna get gone. Gonna set the graphics device to this guy here, change him to a graphics device, whatever. I'm gonna add a new field for content manager. All right, so now we just sort of go and replace capital content with lowercase content. That's not a problem. Capital content, lowercase content. Again, anyone could do this. The graphics device, well, we don't have a graphics device proper anymore. We have this graphics device service. But fortunately, it has a graphics device property. So you just replace, references to your graphics device with references to your service. Your service's graphics device. All right. So this is all, not reporting any errors. You can see everything looks good. I will talk on bootstrapping, but that's not for now. Of course, now this guy is not built anymore, but that's okay, because we can just say shared graphics device.current, and we can say new content manager and pass in the shared graphics device. Oh, I'm sorry, that's not right. And pass in the services as well as, in this case, I always change the root directory to assets because that's where I store my content. If you want to store yours somewhere else, then you can do that. It doesn't matter, but let's call it assets. All right. Absolutely, yeah. Let's go see, yeah. So if the key, yes, you're right. So yeah, good eye, yeah. But if the key is set, then I'm setting it to 1 when it should be, you know what? This is a simpler solution than moving everything around. Okay, so it built, that's good. It will roam its settings, hopefully. Now, notice there's no content, there's no assets here. So I'm going to run the project, but my expectation is it should crash. But let's find out together. Maybe it'll surprise us all. That looks like something's going on. Great. So it can't find the sound effect because it wasn't added. And at this point, I'm not going to make you watch me add all the sound effects. That would be too long. Let me make sure where we are here. Great, yeah. So I'm going to just close this solution. So let me step back and recap here. Copied all the code from the existing Windows 7 project into the Windows 8 project. Fixed the handful of compilation errors that there were. It was great that we didn't have to change things like mouse input. Didn't have to change that. All the core game logic, didn't have to change that. All the drawing logic, didn't have to change that. So, you know, relatively straightforward to do that. We transformed the Ludum-Dare main class so that it is a more reusable class. It is now agnostic in terms of what its container is. It could be put inside an XNA game, or it could be put inside a main page, whatever, you know, whatever the case requires. And we ran the project, but there was no assets. So I'm not going to manually add all the assets, but what you would do at this next step is you would go to your, I guess I don't have it in that one. You'd go to, hopefully, let's see, your content folder. No, darn. Well, you would go find the content wherever you hit it, and ideally you would have a directory with all the compiled content there, and you would add the files to here. Again, you can add them directly. I tend to add them as links. The important thing, I guess, let me go, I want to show you one example just to make sure that we're all on the same page here. So to find the content, that's very frustrating. I'm going to go to the Windows 7 project, which I've actually built, because you have to build the Windows 7 project. You know, the bin directory is where all the build stuff is. We're on the x86 architecture, so that's where that is. I built the debug SKU, so that's where that is. All right, this is where all my content is. Again, a great idea is to have a post-build step that just takes this directory and puts it somewhere more convenient, like under source control, but I didn't do that. But let's just take an image, like the cheese image. So here's these X and Bs I talked about to drive home the point that they're meaningless gobbledygook. You know, nothing you can do with that. You can see at the beginning there's a little bit of metadata that tells the content reader what's what, right? It's saying, okay, use the following class, blah, blah, blah. But let's take that. You could just copy it like this directly. That's fine. Again, I keep saying I think that there are problems with that, but it is ultimately fine. What you need to make sure you do, though, and this is what I want to show you, is you need to make sure that everything you copy, you mark as content. Doesn't take long. You do it once and then you're done. But if you don't do that, it won't get copied to the project, and then Monogame can't find it. So always make sure to do that. For instance, when you're adding new content, I commonly will add the file and forget to mark it as content. Then it doesn't build. So now you know. Now I'm going to close this project. No. And we'll open up the next one. Oh my gosh. Which is the same, it's everything we just did, except for our, you know, done once before ahead of time. And all the content should be added so we can run the game and see what it looks like. Make a few more comments about what that might be like. Visual Studio is finally speeding up. Okay. So again, it's still got the splash screen with the default one. We haven't fixed that, but now you can see the game is loading. You can play the game. It's just the game is running now. We will do more work, as you'll see, to make it well integrated with Windows 8, but you've gotten your game and it's running correctly. One thing to point out is, it's interesting because it looks fine right now, but that's due to the resolution of the screen. If the screen were wider, this whole game state would just be centered on the, or positioned on the top left. So of course, if you want to center things visually in the screen and so forth, you're going to have to do some more work if your code doesn't already take care of that, and other issues like that. So yeah, but I mean, if you look here, let's see, you know, that's going to launch IE. I'm not connected to the internet, but you get the idea. On the other hand, here's the charms. There's nothing here. We haven't implemented any charms yet. Sharing shouldn't work. Yeah, great. That would be a surprise if it did. But all right, so now you have the idea of how to get your app, you know, first run on Windows 8, which I think is important. Let's see if there's anything else worth pointing out in this project. No, I don't think so. Great. So let's jump to the next slide then. All right. So we made the initial blank project. That was pretty straightforward. You had a blank screen. It wasn't that exciting though. We copied all of our code into the Windows 8 project. We found that there weren't that many things that we had to fix. It was an encouraging thing. I am just always blown away that the mouse class works even on the touch and so forth, and we got all that for free. And now we're finding, okay, it's time to get certified for the store. There's a whole bunch of requirements that you might need to do that, such as adding a settings charm and so forth. We also might want to integrate with some of the other Windows 8 features just because that's going to make the experience better, make it more likely that your app stands out and so forth. So I'm going to take you guys through pretty quickly how you can do that at a basic level. And of course, during the workshop today, I'd love to help you make more sophisticated implementations than what I'm about to show you. But I think this will be good for the presentation. So I'm going to switch back to Visual Studio. Okay. But open the solution for no reason, basically. All right, so let's see. I guess to start off with, let's talk about how we can put the logos and splash screens and so forth that we want, because it doesn't look like a very professional app when there's like a giant X that appears. And another thing you can see is, or I guess not, interesting. Well, it's not there, but what I was expecting to see, but I guess I never ran it, is that the application, I don't know where it is, but if it were here as a tile, it would also just be that X and so forth. So we don't want to have that kind of bad experience. This is taking longer to load. Well, while we're waiting for this, I'll just dive into some of the basic stuff which we can explain. At this point, let's see here. I've created a bunch of new files. And my files list, my hard drive is very slow, I apologize. It's not even responding, that's great. So this is the logo for the game. I mean, unfortunately, depending on how you feel, there's many different logos that you need to create for your game, like a store logo, a tile logo, a logo that comes up in search results and so forth. So you need a bunch of different sizes, but ours is a pretty simple one. It's this piece of cheese. You should create a small logo. That's the splash screen, the store logo. Okay, you got it. We got a lot of different types of cheese. And now that this is loaded, I can show you. So once you've created all those files and put them into your assets file or wherever you'd like, you just go to your package manifest. If you name them like I did, to just match the names that were already there, you don't have to make any changes. If you want to, though, you could call it like my logo or whatever. So that's going to have these ones. Wide logo. That was a file that you had to add and name yourself. That didn't exist. Let's see here. That's our wide logo. So this is a tile which is a wide tile. This is a tile that is a small tile. So now you get the sense of it. Wide tiles obviously stand out more, and you can add things like live tile support like this to them. And in fact, I think you should add things like live tile support to them if you're going to support the wide tile, which I'll show you how to do. Other things to think about, do you want the name of the app to appear like it says desktop right here in white? That's controlled by this thing. I generally don't want it because I want my games to stand out with their beautiful artwork. What color you want the foreground text to be. If I did have the text, I would want it to be dark because the cheese is, a white color. This background color is going to control the splash screen's background color. So I want that to be white. You'll see what that looks like. I haven't worked with badges, but basically in the lock screen, it can show you notifications like, unread emails and things like that. That's what this badge would be about. Again, I haven't worked with Toast because I can't imagine why my game would want to bother other people while they're doing other things, but you could set these as well. Okay, so that's going to take care of that first bullet point of how do you set what your tile looks like, what the store icons are, and so forth. Let's take a look at the settings charm. Let me run this real quick, and I'll show you, hopefully show you. So, okay, there's the nice splash screen. Wow, looks much more professional, I guess. And the game, of course, looks all the same. So now, when you go here and you go to settings, I've added two things, a privacy policy link and an about page. I'm under the impression from a previous Windows 8 dev camp that it's a requirement that you have this privacy policy there. The simplest thing to do is to just have it be a URL and open it the way I showed you a moment ago with that launcher when I launched my company's website. Again, I will show you how I'm doing that here, but that's the simplest thing to do. And then you can link to your website where you have a privacy policy, blah, blah, blah. The about thing, more complicated, unfortunately, but let's take a look at what it looks like. So here's the about page, and it's got this back button that takes you there and so forth. This link will open up my website, yada, yada. You could put here, for instance, in my other games where you can mute the game and things like that, you would put a settings tab. And if you click the settings button, rather, it would look just like this, but with slightly different options and so forth. I'll show you how to do all that. Likewise, I've implemented the sharing charm. So now it's going to get information and it's going to bring up applications that can share. In Windows 8, your application can be the source of something to share, which is what my games are, and I hope your games will be as well. So you share things like high scores or accomplishments or the game itself. And then, of course, you can also make applications which are the target of something to be shared. I can imagine cases where games might do that, but it seems more uncommon. Obviously, like Facebook or email are common examples. So this is a boring example. I'm not connected to the internet, so it's not going to do all the things that it does. But basically, you can give it a little bit of text and a subject, and it'll create a draft email for you and so forth. And then you can say, look, Mom, I'm playing this game. You should play it too. So let's see that. And is there anything else that's interesting here? No. I guess one other thing is, let's see if I can, this is a simple level, so let me just turn it endlessly until we clear it. Okay. So hopefully it will kick in, although sometimes when you're on a debugger, things are weird. Let's see. That is incredibly weird to me. Sorry, guys. I don't know where Move the Cheese went. There it is. Pin to start. Okay. So here's Move the Cheese. And that little flip, I think, was because it has a live tile. Yes, there you see. So it's saying, hey, you cleared level 1 in 6 turns. So you can add that kind of functionality as well. To be clear, live tiles have different functions or different purposes. If you're something like this news app, I suppose, your live tile is going to be getting content from the internet through a push service that will let you know the latest news story. That's great, but it means that you have to implement a server and a server-side service and all much more complexity in order to do the push notifications. What I've been doing, and I would recommend if you're just making a game, you can update the live tiles locally for that specific computer with relevant information. So typically, whenever the player clears a new level or something along those lines, I just set that live tile on that person's computer as a reminder, like, you were playing the game, you should come back and keep playing it. And then after a week's time or something, the tile expires.